Dealings with the devotees are kept and takes care of them. And regardless of who they are, what their birth is, if they worship him with devotion, he cares for them so carefully. And then in the 10th chapter, Krishna explains his capacity to take care of his devotees. And explain more about dealings with his devotees by saying Aham Sarasvi Bhagavo Matak Sarama. And the other three verses of the Tata Sloka Bhagavad Gita, explaining that he is the source of everything, everything comes from him. So therefore, one shouldn't worship the demigod, one shouldn't worship anyone. See Krishna, the Supreme Personality of God. And then Krishna went on in the 10th chapter to explain his opulence, explaining how he can be received so easily within the material world of letters, I am a letter om, of monarchs, I am of men, I am the monarch, of warriors, I am Ram, of the Pandavas, I am Arjuna. How do you think Arjuna felt when he said that, when Krishna said that? Very good. And then at the end of the 10th chapter, Krishna said, Yad Yad Yogutimat Sarvam Srimad Ojitam Srivam. That every beautiful and glorious thing in this creation just is me. I give it that glory. And then, Mama Amsa Tejo Samrava. Mama Tejo Amsa Samrava. That there's no need for me to explain so much detailed knowledge. You should know that just by an Amsa, a part of my potency, I maintain and support the entire universe. And what is that Amsa of Krishna that maintains and supports the entire universe? Paramatma. But of course, anyone can say that I am maintaining and supporting the entire universe, but it's very difficult to do that, in fact. So to demonstrate to Arjuna, based on Arjuna's inquiries, let me see that form by which you maintain and support the entire universe. Krishna displays in chapter 11 two forms actually. One is his Vishwarupa, his universal form, and the other is his Kalarupa, his form of time by which he devours everything within the material world. And then, at the end of the 11th chapter, after Krishna resumes his human form, which is his real form, Arjuna feels satisfied after being terrified by the universal form. And then, Krishna, at the end of the 10th chapter, in the last two verses, explains bhakti. Bhaktiya khananiyat shaktyo hameva vidyuvajana yatyum jastyum titadvena kaveshtyum taparintapa. Only by pure devotional service can I be seen as I am, understood as I am, standing before you. This is the only way. And what did Arjuna see standing before him? Krishna in his two arms. Even though Krishna displayed the universal form, he actually, Ramano hi pratishtaham, he will say later, that I am the basis of Brahman, is the basis of the universal form. Krishna displayed all this, the impersonal, the universal, all emanating from Krishna. And only by pure devotional service can Krishna be understood as he is, standing as he was standing before Arjuna. And only in this way, meaning only by devotional service, can one enter into the mysteries of understanding Krishna. And then Krishna closes the 11th chapter with this wonderful verse. Mat kama krit mat paramo mat bhakta sangha vargita nivaraj sarvabhuteshu yasramethi pandana. My dear Arjuna, He who engages in my pure devotional service, free from the contamination, the fruit of activities and mental speculation, that means free from karma and jnana, who engages in pure devotional service. Practically, this is Anyavilasitasunyam, the verse, the seed verse of Bhaktarasam, the Sindhu Nectar of Devotion, wherein Rupa Goswami defines, Sri Rupa Goswami defines pure devotional service. So he who engages in my pure devotional service, free from the contamination of furtive activities and mental speculation, he who works for me, who makes me the supreme goal of his life, and is friendly to every living being, he certainly comes to me. So Krishna has told Arjuna here that if we do this, he will certainly come to me. Then, in the beginning of the 12th chapter, Arjuna becomes eager to hear devotional service glorified directly, because so far in the Bhagavad Gita, in many, many chapters, even in the 9th chapter, Krishna has glorified and spoken about Jnana Yoga and other places about Karma Yoga. Now, in this end of the 12th chapter, which is the end of the second part, the most confidential part of the Bhagavad Gita, 7 through 12 are the most confidential chapters of the Bhagavad Gita because they talk about Krishna. In this beginning of the 12th chapter, Krishna is going to explain how, which is superior. Any other process or bhakti. So Arjuna asks, who are considered to be more perfect? Those who are always properly engaged in your devotional service, or those who worship the impersonal Brahman? So this is Arjuna's question. Who's is situated better? Whose knowledge is better? Those who are worshipping Brahman, which is also Krishna, in his nivishesh, aspectless, how can you say it? Aspectless form? No, you can't say an aspectless form, because how can a form not have aspects? In fact, when you're talking about the impersonal, you can't say anything, because as soon as you say something, you're giving it a quality. Even if you say it has no form, that means it has the quality of formlessness. And it's by definition without form. So practically you can't say anything, which is just what we recommend to impersonalists, to be quiet and not say anything. As soon as they say the impersonal is this, they're creating duality between themselves and that. So the impersonal position is very difficult for many reasons. It's not at all practical. It's useless, actually. But yet, to hear the glories of devotional service, Arjuna asks, which are more perfect? Those who are always properly engaged in your devotional service, or those who worship the impersonal Brahman, the unmanifest? This question, or this mood, is often exhibited by Mayavadis who say, yes, you can take to devotional service if you are so unfortunate, if you're sentimental, and if you're not qualified. You can take the devotional service, bhakti, but if you're qualified, if you're actually advanced, you take the meditation on the impersonal. So here Arjuna is asking, which is actually better? He's asking the greatest of authorities, Krishna, which is actually better? And Krishna is going to answer, who is situated better? One who is engaged in Krishna consciousness, bhakti yoga, or one who is engaged in meditation on Brahman. And here's the beginning of Krishna's answer. He makes it clear right from the very beginning. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, those who fix their minds on my personal form and are always engaged in worshipping me with great and transcendental faith are considered by me to be the most perfect. Now, on the other hand, for those who fully worship the unmanifest, that which lies beyond the perception of the senses, the all-pervading, inconceivable, unchanging, fixed, and immovable, the impersonal conception. Why is the impersonal conception fixed and immovable. It's fixed because it's everything, but you can't say it's everything because everything is a concept. But in any case, you try to think of it as fixed, and even though it can't be fixed because that's a concept, you have to think of it as fixed, and you can't even think of it as all-pervading because that's a quality. I want to speak of thinking of, conceiving of it as inconceivable. So you can really imagine how difficult it is to be an impersonalist, trying to... It's immovable because it's everything. Of course, it's not everything really, because you might as well say it's nothing. Because you can't say it's one, because if you say it's one, that implies that something is not one. But if you say it's one, that implies it's two, then it's not. And if there's two, and then there's one, that means there's duality. So this position is actually very, very difficult. What to speak of to meditate on it? So those who are worshipping this, whatever it is, or whatever it isn't, the impersonal conception equally disposed to everyone, because after all, they are no different from you, because everything is inconceivable and one, and immovable. But that's what I wonder about. If everything is immovable, why do we see the Mayavadi is always moving here and there when it's time for prasadam? Places to get chapatis. So such persons engaged in the welfare of all at last achieve me. So trying to do this is so difficult, it's practically impossible. And the result is they achieve Krishna. Krishna says, Mam Eva. They achieve me, but they can't achieve Krishna in his... they don't achieve Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan, and they don't achieve Krishna in Mathura or Dwarka, or they don't achieve Krishna in this form of Ram, and they don't achieve Krishna in Vaikuntha. What form of Krishna do they achieve? Not the Super Soul either. They achieve Krishna's Brahman Vishnu. This is Advaya Gyan. The impersonal, which is actually Krishna's effulgence, is... this pursuit is achieved by them, and that's Krishna. But it's a very, in one sense, unfortunate aspect of Krishna to achieve, because if one fully achieves that, one loses his ability to serve Krishna. One loses his individuality. So their achievement is like achieving an eternal jail sentence. Prison sentence. So it's not an achievement. After all their hard work, they go to the same place where the demons who Krishna kills goes. And Krishna kills the demons and puts them in a place where he doesn't have to bother them with them anymore in his impersonal Brahman. And the great, great, great Mayavadis, not Mayavadis, even Brahmavadis, they'll achieve through their hard work, which is so difficult, the same position as the demons. So we can imagine how exalted they actually are. So they achieve the nivishesha, the qualityless aspect of Krishna. For those whose minds are attached to the unmanifest, impersonal feature of the Supreme, advancement is always very troublesome. To make progress in this discipline is always difficult for those who are embodied. So this is the answer to Arjuna's question, who's better situated? And it's clear that the impersonalists are not better situated at all, because there they are in a body, and they have to conceive of something that's inconceivable, and not only that, they have to be satisfied conceiving of something inconceivable. And they have senses. And the senses demand engagement. And yet they can't engage the senses because it's not within their process. So practically speaking, it's torture and it's hypocrisy. Because no one can succeed in doing it. Not no one, but practically speaking, no one can succeed on this impersonal path. It is always difficult for those who are embodied, because one is a soul within a body, and the energy from the soul, we call that solar energy, the energy from the soul is coming through the body. And the body therefore is active. And because the soul is active, the body is active. And therefore, they have to torture themselves by remaining inactive. Practically, it's a punishment. All of us, we can see if how difficult it is to just listen to a class for an hour and a half, without moving. Just to keep the body stationary for that long without moving is so difficult, practically torture. And the only way you can stop from going to sleep to avoid the torture is, the only way to do it is to keep your mind very active in interacting with the speaker and what he is saying. Is this true? You have to keep your mind so active. Is this true? What's an example of that? Try to understand it deeper, etc. So if the body is inactive, the intelligence and mind have to be inactive. And if the body and intelligence and mind are inactive, then it really is torture. And you immediately go to sleep. One takes shelter of the mode of ignorance, or practically one has to start moving around, etc. It's so difficult. This is what Krishna is saying. It's so difficult because we have senses that demand engagement. The mind is one of the senses. It demands engagement. So the impersonalist whose business is, it's actually envy of Krishna. That position is simply envy of Krishna. We want to be Krishna. So it's actually, in the guise of spirit, Krishna is giving us an opportunity to serve him. This is our constitutional position. Jivara Srupoi Krishner Nityadas. We are Krishna's servant. And Krishna gives us an opportunity from the material world to rejoin him in service. And the people want to be transcendentalists. And instead of serving Krishna, they want to be Krishna. Become Krishna. So that is envy. Simply envy. Not being able to acknowledge that we are Krishna's servant. And therefore they are tortured by not being able to engage their senses in Krishna's service. So therefore it's miserable. Actually, this path is miserable. Now, on the other hand, Krishna's going back to explain the position of his devotees. On one hand, the position of the Mayavadis or the impersonalists is so difficult, and they're relying on their own potency, on their own ability to concentrate on nothing. But look at the situation of the devotees. That those who worship me, giving up all their activities unto me, and being devoted to me without deviation, engaged in devotional service and always meditating on me, having fixed their minds upon me. So these qualities are all glorious. For these people, O son of Prita, for them, I am the swift deliverer from the ocean of birth and death. Tesha maham sumudarta, mrityu samsara sagara. Mrityu samsara sagara means that there is an ocean of death. Mrityu samsara sagara. Death and birth. And eternally, practically, birth and death, and birth and death, and birth and death. And this whole material world is an ocean of that.
I will.
Vrajbihari? Mari is not here. What do So Krishna says, Tesha Maham, Samudata means the deliverer. I am the deliverer. Does that mean that Krishna personally comes and delivers the devotee from the ocean of death? You can understand that this material world is truly an ocean of death. We can understand that. And some people are staying afloat on that ocean for a little time, and some people are sinking. All continuously. This is what's going on. We stay afloat for a little while and then we sink. And it's such torture. Even if we decide that we like the material world, we can't stay here. We will be kicked out. We're forced to drown. Even if one is the greatest of swimmers, if one is in the middle of the ocean, what is his hope? Even the greatest of swimmers in the ocean is insignificant. One time, one devotee said to Srila Prabhupada, compared to my god brothers, I feel so weak. And Prabhupada said, compared to Krishna, everyone is weak. So that is our situation, that everyone is tiny and insignificant and weak. And here we are stuck in the vast ocean of birth and death. So if one, while he's in that ocean, realizing his situation, performs the process of devotional service, worshipping Krishna, giving up all his activities to Krishna, being devoted to Krishna without deviation, engaged in devotional service, and always meditating on Krishna, having fixed their minds upon Him, O son of Krita, to them Krishna says, Tesham Aham, for them, I, Aham, Samudat, I am the deliverer, with you, from this ocean, birth and death. Prabhupada explained in the purport, I'll read just one paragraph. The purport of this verse, this is on page 620, right at the top, is that a devotee does not need to practice Astanga Yoga in order to transfer his soul to the spiritual planets. The responsibility is taken by the Supreme Lord Himself. So that means if we give ourselves completely to Krishna and have no other shelter but Krishna, and we don't have any energy in our existence to do anything but serve Krishna, then Krishna takes full responsibility for that devotee. And that devotee need not worry about anything whatsoever, including about getting free from the ocean, the terrible, raging, storming ocean of material existence. The responsibility is taken by the Supreme Lord Himself. He clearly states here that He Himself becomes the deliverer. So it doesn't depend on our power because we are all weak. If Krishna delivers us, what is the difference if one person is this weak and another person is this much stronger? If Krishna is the deliverer, it doesn't make any difference. We are all weak. A child is completely cared for by his parents, and his position thus is secure. Similarly, a devotee does not need to endeavor to transfer himself by yoga practice to other planets. Rather, the Supreme Lord, by His great mercy, comes at once riding on His bird carrier Garuda, and at once delivers the devotee from material existence. Although a man who has fallen in the ocean may struggle very hard, and may be very expert in swimming, he cannot save himself. But if someone comes and picks him up from the water, then he is easily rescued. Similarly, the Lord picks up the devotee from this material existence. One simply has to practice the easy process of Krishna consciousness and fully engage himself in devotional service. Any intelligent man should always prefer the process of devotional service to all other paths. Now Krishna is going to explain in verses 8 through 12 different stages in the level of devotional service. Different stages of devotional service. The first is the highest stage. Mayeva mana. Count how many times Krishna says, on me, me, me. It's three times. Mayeva mana adatspa. Just fix your mind on me. Don't try to fix it on impersonal. Don't try to fix it on anything but me. Maeva manada tva main budin neveshaya. Neveshishasi maeva atto bodham asamsaya. You come to me without any doubt. Just fix your mind upon me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and engage all your intelligence in me. Thus you will live in me always, without a doubt. This is the perfection of Krishna consciousness. And when Krishna says, Mayeva mana adatsva, what does he mean that we should fix our mind on? We should fix our mind on Shyamasundara, where the peacock feather is red, with his wearing a yellow dhoti, that is his brilliant flash of lightning, with his color of his skin, like a fresh monsoon cloud, with his flute in his belt. This is what Krishna means. You fix your mind upon me. Flower garlands around his neck. That's what Krishna means. And one who is expert at fixing his mind on Krishna is the tapas of transcendentalists. And this, as you have so many times said, is the conclusion and the essence of all sadhana, to always remember Krishna and never forget. I'm going to read this entire purport for 8. This is Krishna's direct order, and this is actually Krishna's desire for everyone. One who is engaged in Lord Krishna's devotional service lives in a direct relationship with the Supreme Lord. So there is no doubt that his position is transcendental from the very beginning. A devotee does not live on the material plane. He lives in Krishna. The holy name of the Lord and the Lord are not different. Therefore, when a devotee chants Hare Krishna, Krishna and his internal potency are dancing on the tongue of the devotee. When he offers Krishna food, Krishna directly accepts these eatables, and the devotee becomes Krishnaized by eating the remnants. One who does not engage in such service cannot understand how this is so, although this is a process recommended in Bhagavad Gita and other Vedic literatures. Maya Tateshu Chapyam, Krishna says, I'm in them, my devotees, and they are in me. So the devotee actually lives in Krishna. And Krishna in chapter 7, and chapter 8, and chapter 9, chapter 10, and he proves it by showing his universal form to Arjuna. He's showing that how he is everywhere, so we can perceive Krishna with our intelligence, so we can understand that we are living only in Krishna. There is nothing separate from Krishna. It's Maya that makes us forget this. So Krishna, by his kindness in these earlier chapters, has taught us how, with our intelligence, he's taught us how we can see him everywhere, and by seeing him everywhere, how we can understand that we are living in him. And when we are living in Krishna, we can understand that he is not far away. And when we understand that he is close, and if we have affection for him, and feel that we are serving him, and that he will surely care for us, where is a lonely or dangerous position? There is no place, and therefore when one takes sannyas, one practices this specific thing, just traveling everywhere, fully depending on Krishna, never feeling alone or separate from Krishna, because Krishna is there in so many different ways, hundreds and thousands, unlimitedly billions of different ways Krishna is everywhere and he's close to us. And even if we don't see Krishna anywhere outside, still, within the heart. So we should never feel alone. We should always understand that this is clearly the goal of Krishna consciousness. This is one form, but it's also very difficult. So Krishna gives a level down. But this is Krishna's desire. He gives the next level down in text 9. My dear Arjuna, O winner of wealth, Dhananjaya, O Dhananjaya, O winner of wealth, if you cannot fix your mind upon me without deviation, if you cannot do what I suggested in the previous verse, my eva mana adatsva, if you cannot fix your mind on me without deviation, then follow the regulative principles of bhakti yoga. In this way, develop a desire to attain me. Now, there's different ways of explaining this progression. Actually, Prabhupada explains it in a most merciful way. Because he goes in Kali Yuga, he makes the simplest start of Krishna consciousness by saying, even if you can't do it, in text 11, Prabhupada will give this personal, that even if you have no, if you can't serve Krishna, at least do some unselfish work. At least do something unselfishly, and then your mind will get purified. And even though really that won't help you, but if your mind is purified, maybe then you'll be able to get some Krishna consciousness in your heart. So Prabhupada, even if he brings it to the lowest level, because he's preaching all over the world in Kali Yuga, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains these verses in another way, and Srila Baladev Vidyabhusan explains these verses in still another way, a different way. I'm going to explain them, the easiest way for me to explain them, the connections between them is following Baladev Vidyabhusan, explaining them in a little bit of a less merciful way than Prabhupada did. But we'll explain it in that way. This means, and what Krishna is saying here, is that the last verse in text 8, Krishna says, you fix your mind on me. And if you can't do that, what you should do is by following the rules and regulations. What rules and regulations? Are these the rules and regulations to always remember Krishna? So if you're not on that ashakti platform of attachment, where your mind naturally is always attached to Krishna, and that is the difference between ashakti and the state of ruchi. In ruchi, the mind wanders away from Krishna, and you have to pull it back. And ashakti, the mind wanders to Krishna. Because you have attachment, ashakti. So, if your mind isn't fixed on Krishna naturally, then follow the rules and regulations of always fixing your mind on Krishna. Prabhupada explains in his purport. In this verse, two different processes of bhakti yoga are indicated. The first applies to one who has actually developed an attachment for Krishna, which really refers to the previous verse, which is Krishna's desire. An attachment for Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by transcendental love. And the other one is for those who have not developed an attachment for the Supreme Personality of Godhead by transcendental love. For this second class, there are different prescribed rules and regulations one can follow to be ultimately elevated to the stage of attachment to Krishna. That is the goal, attachment to Krishna. And to focus one's mind on Krishna is the means of attaining that goal. That is, because that's the essence of sadhana bhakti. And actually, there's a nice verse that Sri Rupa Goswami has composed in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Kritya sadhya bhavet sadhya bhav sadha nitya vi nitya siddhasya bhavasya prakatam nitya sadhita. That the goal, basically this explains, that kritya sadhya bhavet sadhya sadhanadya vi, that the goal of the sadhana, of performing sadhana bhakti, is bhava bhakti. Prakatam riddhya sadhita, or manifest in the heart. The goal of sadhana is bhava. Now in the next verse, there's one comment by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. He calls, and it's interesting, and it's clear why Krishna calls Arjuna Dhananjaya, a winner of wealth, because he's encouraging him to win the greatest wealth. And what is the greatest wealth? being described here, fixing your mind always in Krishna with love. So he's encouraging him in that way. And Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, "You are Dhananjaya, winner of wealth, which you obtained by fighting. Now fight with your mind and obtain the wealth of meditation upon me. When one's mind becomes accustomed to thinking always of Krishna, one can thus attain Krishna." And what is the mind? So what the method of fighting with the mind? Abhyas and Vairagya. Constant practice and detachment. And lots of hearing about Krishna. Because by hearing about Krishna, naturally we become attached to Krishna. Why do we naturally become attached to Krishna by hearing about him? Because he is all attractive. Different from the mind having to become attached to something in person which has no attractive qualities. Krishna has all, everything Krishna does is attractive. So therefore the more we hear about Krishna, the more attracted to him we become. And if the mind becomes somehow or another averse to Krishna and moving away from attraction to Krishna and moving towards attraction to Maya, and so many topics of Maya, we can understand that is not good. We can understand there are anartas developing, the heart is becoming covered. And what means probably we're getting bad association. Or committing offenses. Text 10. Now the next, so the first stage is always thinking about Krishna. Second is you're trying and practicing to always think about Krishna. So the third stage is text 10. What if you can't always practice? You know, if you're not that determined and pure to just practice. Baladev Vidyabhushana gives this comment by Arjuna by saying, "My mind flickers like the wind, and I don't have the strength to control it and focus it on Krishna by practice. What should I do then?" So here is the instruction, one level down. If you cannot practice the regulations of Bhakti Yoga for always fixing your mind on me, then just try to work for me, because by working for me you will come to the perfect stage. So this working for me, Prabhupada explains it in a very merciful way, as we'll read it in a moment. At the end of the purport, he explains it as Nishkam Karma Yoga, basically. Srila Baladev Vidyabhushana explains that this working for Krishna is engaging not in what you want to do, but what Krishna wants you to do. This is working for Krishna. Because your work is Krishna's work. So that means preaching, it means book distribution, it means deity worship, it means cleaning the floor of the temple room, it means taking care of the tulsi plants and stringing flower garlands. These really basic hearing, chanting, stuff like that. These really basic works in Krishna's service where one is surrendered to Krishna. So if you cannot practice the regulation of Bhakti Yoga, meaning that will fix your mind on Krishna, then work for Krishna. So by working for Krishna, you will come to the perfect stage. So note that in these verses, in 8, 9, and 10, each one of these verses tell the result of practicing on that level. So in 8, the result of fixing your mind on Krishna is you will always live in Krishna without a doubt. And in 9, the result of following the regulation, rules and regulations for always remembering Krishna, the result is you will develop a deep desire to obtain him. And if you develop a deep desire to obtain Krishna, then you will obtain him, because everything is based on desire. And then in 10, if you work for Krishna, surrender to Krishna, perform bhakti yoga for Krishna, do as Krishna wants, you will come to the perfect stage. And then, in text 11, first I want to read the purport.
How is this different?
I'll read the purport for 11 after we excuse me, the 10 that I want to read after I read 11 and explain a little about it. If, however, you are unable to work in this consciousness of me, surrendered to Krishna, or your work to Krishna, then try to give up all the results of your work and try to be self-situated. So this, according to Baladeva Yavusan, indicates nishkam karma, where you can't live in the temple and surrender and do what Krishna wants. So rather than doing that, you do what you want, but thinking that you're Krishna's servant and therefore you offer him all the fruit of your work. Prabhupada's in 10 really applies to Baladev Vidyabhusan's explanation of 11, so I'll read that. The only difference is that in materialism one works for sense gratification. The same work, however, can be performed for the satisfaction of Krishna, and that is spiritual activity. If one has sufficient money, he can help in building an office or temple for propagating Krishna consciousness, or he can help with publications. There are various fields of activities, and one should be interested in such activities. If one cannot sacrifice the results of his activities, the same person can still sacrifice some percentage to propagate Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada is so merciful and so practical. He's giving such practical instructions to humanity at large that if you can't always fix your mind on Krishna, then try to fix your mind on Krishna. If you can't perfectly fix your mind on Krishna, then live in the temple and do temple work. And if you can't do that, live outside and work for Krishna and renounce the fruit of your work for him. And if you can't live outside and renounce the fruit of your work for Krishna, at least renounce something for Krishna, a portion of the fruit of your work. But don't misuse your human life. And if you follow these principles, then you will become elevated. But when you do this, you should try to be self-situated. And what does self-situated mean? Krishnera Nitya Das. I am Krishna's eternal servant. And therefore, in one sense, I am not working, I'm not renouncing anything because everything belongs to Krishna. I cannot renounce anything because nothing is mine. So that is how we can understand up to this point in the progression. Baladev Vidyabhusan Prabhu explains, be like a lotus flower stem that has fibers inside. Deep inside your heart, the fibers of devotion with complete knowledge that you are my part and parcel and I am the Lord. So just like the lotus stem is made strong firm by the fibers. Similarly, we should be firm and strong in understanding that we are Krishna's part and parcel. Mamaya vamsam jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. And that Krishna is the Lord and we should serve him. And this is our constitutional position. This is the strength, the fiber of our consciousness, the very substance of our consciousness. So, Prabhupada, in his purport to this 11th verse, so kindly makes a simpler stage even, that one can at least stop being so foolishly selfish and thinking that your existence is the center of the universe, at least be a little charitable and perform some punya, or at least do something except take care of your selfish self, and that will gradually possibly help you. Even some community service, national service, sacrifice for one's country, social service. Not actually recommending these things, but if you're so low that you can't do anything, at least do that, and then maybe you'll take a book or take some prasadam one day or say Hare Krishna. Or at least you say, oh, this book is Bhagavad Gita, is so nice, and that will start you on your way. So this is what Baladev Vidyabhusan recommends. This is actually nishkam karma that Krishna is recommending. Now this 12th verse is one of the most difficult verses in the Bhagavad Gita to understand.
Excuse me, but you just said that same, but there's 10 words nishkam karma, no?
I said the purport in number 10. Prabhupada says that gears it down a bit lower.
But what is it according to Bharatiya Vidya?
That's not Nishkanthapur, but Bhakti, living in a temple, doing activities such as gardening for the deities, tulsi, puja, worshipping garlands. Yeah.
But you were saying the results living in Krishna number 8, which is there for what? The results of the verses, you know. You were saying in verse 8, the result is living in Krishna, result in number 10, deep desire to stay in him, and in number 10, come to perfect stage.
And there is no result mentioned in 11. What indication does that give you? What do you think that means?
Well, I think I would like to be confident in the good advice.
Yes, we should come up.
Well, if it's Nishkam Kama Yoga, there would be a result.
Yeah, the result is actually explained in text 12. That's what the result is. Yeah.
His verse 11, according to Prabhupada, is that Sakam Kama Yoga?
It's no yoga. No, it's Sarva Kama Yoga. It means there's no yoga in it. If you read Prabhupada's purport, that when one who is not even interested in the activities of Krishna consciousness gives charity to some hospital or some other social institution.
So just to understand, so I live in the temple and I'm making gardens every day. So I'm for me actually Karma Yoga.
No.
Or Bhakti Yoga.
11 is Bhakti Yoga, 10 is Bhakti Yoga according to Baladeva. Which means you're that means you're surrendering your activities to Krishna, not the results of your activities. So the surrender is in the activity, not just the result. And 11 is the result.
What
Krishna means is that you should fully surrender to him and fix your mind on him. That's what Krishna means. So he's giving different ways that you can do so, and the acharyas through their own realization, their own preaching, are explaining it in different ways. If you want to think that there's only one meaning of anything, then you will be wrong. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur spoke on the first verse of the Bhagavatam for 3 months every single day. What did Krishna really mean when he spoke? What did Vyasadeva really mean when he spoke that verse of a few lines? They're unlimitedly expandable.
So someone can get any interpretation of life as long as the Siddhanta is right.
And as long as you're an acharya, like Prabhupada, Paladeva Vidya Bhushan, or Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, for us people who are not so qualified in that way, we just follow them. But, I mean, not you. But we have to follow. You can give any explanation you like. As long as you sit on this. We don't. We follow the acharya. That is our position.
In verse 9, the Prabhupada is brought to discrimination between Radha Puja Bhakti and Vai Sarana Bhakti.
No. He's discriminating between the Saraka and the Siddha, the practitioner and the perfect wala, the perfect person. It's confusing, huh?
Yeah.
How come I'm not confused about it?
Yeah.
I'm obviously not a very good teacher, though.
Yeah. It's just now becoming more clear.
Good, good. Wait till I explain text 12 to you.
Yeah.
Then you really become
clear. The thing I don't understand is if 10 is Bhakti, why is 9 not Bhakti? It's Sadhana Bhakti. What is the thing? Is that also Sadhana Bhakti?
But on a different level. Sadhana is on many different levels.
Yeah, I can understand. But what?
One is in 9, one is his what he's doing is fixing his mind on Krishna.
That's quite high level, actually.
That's very high level. That's his practice, always fixing his mind on Krishna. We don't, that's not our practice of activity. Ours is working for Krishna, surrendering the first part. Yeah.
This way we can think of this, in the early days, Prabhupada moved very liberal with anyone who had a good idea to do it for Krishna. He would allow them to do it and accept them.
Encouraging everyone. You have to encourage people when you're preaching. Like Prabhupada said in the early days, if I tell you all the rules and regulations of deity worship, you would faint. In the early days, when we were living in the temple, we would sleep in the temple room, and the rule was you just had to get up before 6 o'clock. Because the first morning part of the morning program would begin at 7 o'clock. And it would end at 8 o'clock, the whole morning program. So Prabhupada was encouraging the devotees, encouraging. Just chant Hare Krishna, just chant Hare Krishna. So nice. Just chant Hare Krishna. Whatever you like to do, do it for Krishna. So nice, you're playing the guitar for Krishna, playing music, writing songs for Krishna. You've made a nice bookmark. It's so nice. Do it for Krishna. Whatever you like, do it for Krishna. But gradually... Because why? Because the pressure to actually get something very valuable out of us, we need the pressure to have to come. You said I can do whatever I want for Krishna.
Yeah.
Not anymore. You're grown up now. Now you're older. You have to be more responsible and focus your life.
So both Srila Prabhupada and Prabhupada Pitti Bhushan agree on verses 8 and 9.
There's no disagreement. Don't speak like that. That's a disagreement.
They use different terms.
They have different explanations.
It's also a little coin. Prabhupada is pointing out according to place and time.
Good.
What people are able to do.
What he's preaching, because he wants to encourage everyone throughout the world. He once told me it is my desire that every living entity in this world become Krishna conscious. So his mission was huge. The Acharya, these other Acharyas were dealing in a different culture, a very cultured, pure people. So sometimes the explanation is different.
So there's no Sankham coming over here?
No. So we go on to 12 and all this stuff. Finish, okay. Now, this is a very difficult verse to understand, but now you'll easily understand it. If you cannot take to this practice, now what does Krishna refer to this practice? He means, if you cannot focus your mind on me, which is what I really want you to do, my eva mana adatva. If you cannot focus your mind on me, then engage yourself in the cultivation of knowledge. Now, he first told the highest thing, focus your mind on me. If you cannot do that, engage in the cultivation of knowledge. And he moves to the bottom, which is jnana yoga. That means impersonal realization. He tried to get that. But better than knowledge, however, is meditation. He goes up a stage, because that's paramatma realization. And better than meditation is renunciation of the fruits of action, which is text 11, which is bhakti. Because, and here is the result of this Nishkam Karma, because by such renunciation one will attain peace of mind. And what is that peace of mind? That's been described already at the end of the fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Bhoktaram jagatapasam suridam savabhutanam yatvamam shantim rikshati. You will attain that peace, 529, which is bhakti. So first, always be purely fixed on your mind on me. If you can't do that, either engage in jnana, And if you can't, but better than Gyan is meditation on the Super Soul. Better than meditation is this bhakti of Nishkam Karma, which will bring you to the position of the highest position of fixing your mind on me. So Krishna here again is stressing this karma, phal, tyag, renunciation of the fruits of work, because that is the practical level by which we preach. We preach to people to give up their work. Krishna is preaching to Arjuna on this very, very practical level. Now you understand? Otherwise, very difficult to understand the person. Because it goes up from the top to there, then there.
So this practice, that refers to taste 8?
Ah, Panji.
He summarizes basically.
Huh?
Krishna summarizes.
Yeah, he's summarizing the whole up to the Bhagavad Gita from this point, including the first 6 chapters. Because this is the 12th chapter, the end of the... putting everything in perspective, summarizing the part, the Bhagavad Gita up to this point.
I think sometimes describe that when you attain the love, when you're practicing jhana, when you attain realization, then you move on to this yoga. Then when you attain realization, then you move on to bhakti.
The yoga ladder is in the end of the 6th chapter. The yoga ladder is described. This is another progression that's being described here, so we can understand the perspective of all things.
So from that perspective, that it seems like it's better to practice Gyan before. If you're just talking about the difference between Gyan and Nishchit Yoga, it seems like it's better to practice Gyan first.
You want to practice Gyan before you practice Mystic Yoga, you're saying?
Well, it's not.
I recommend you change your rounds. One time a devotee said to Prabhupada, wrote Prabhupada a letter and said, since Brahman realization is before Bhakti Yoga, I think I'm going to... I want to go and become Brahman realized, and then I'll come back. And Prabhupada said, are you chanting your 16 rounds a day? No. I'm not sure what your question was.
I think in Prabhupada's purport, if I remember correctly, sometimes it's described that if one, instead of taking the path of bhakti yoga, just like an elevator, he instead tries to gradually rise step by step, and he starts on the jhana path.
Starts with karma, so we went through this right in the beginning, the yoga.
That's right, karma, and when he attains realization.
Karma, jnana, yoga, bhakti.
Right, gradually. So if you weren't to take the elevator to bhakti yoga, it seems like it's better to start with karma.
Are you chanting your rounds every day? What do you mean it's better to start with karma?
No, I mean compared to jhana. To start, say the person who's not following bhakti yoga, this Prabhupada talks about these things,
say there's people who are practicing karma yoga, people who are practicing jhana. When they read the Bhagavad Gita as it is, when they read the Bhagavad Gita, they'll see where what they're doing is in perspective of the whole search for the absolute truth. And not that they're going to think that now I should go like this. Because everything depends on association. So due to the association with the Mahabhagavat, they can jump right up onto bhakti. Not that they'll say, oh, now I should practice jhana because I think, and then after 40 births, I'll be on the level of dhyana. No, they'll understand in perspective what they're doing. You follow?
I understand the intent of this preaching of Krishna. I understand that that's his intent, that's his perspective. I was just wondering, isn't it a relevant question to want to know in terms of the Vedas and Prabhupada's purports, if you're not following the path of Bhakti Yoga, to practice Mystic Yoga, do you first need to realize jhana to be able to do anything in Mystic Yoga?
To realize what?
Like in Mystic Yoga, it says...
To realize what? I just couldn't hear what you said.
Jhana.
Realize what?
Jhana. Realization.
Yeah, with all the different stages. Astanga Yoga has 8 different stages. If the 6th chapter explains when you can actually give up work, when you're on the Jhana platform, it's called the Yoga Rudha stage. So that's also explained. When you, even if you're just practicing yoga, there's a time when you can give up work. You still have to work until a certain time. Bhakti is better. When you're doing bhakti and renouncing the fruit of the work, it's better than being a jnani. Because see, bhakti, that's nishkam karma, which is a combination of karma and jnana. It's karma on the jnana level. That's what nishkam karma is. Knowing that you're a soul and acting, and yet acting. So you're acting on the jnana level. That's nishkam karma.
In verse 11, Krishna's placing surrender in the fruits of one's work as the last resort.
As the, because the brain is bhakti, it's the lowest level on bhakti.
But in verse 12, he uses the same term, karma phala jnana, but he's placing it as the highest.
So he's placing it as the highest on the lowest part of bhakti.
It's the start of bhakti.
Yes.
I just wanted to confirm, the highest on the lowest part, is that nishkam karma?
It's the lowest on the highest path. So it's like being someone else may be walking up the stairs and up to here. And you may be on the elevator and you're up to here. So who is more fortunate?
You are, because you can go
right
up.
So it's just very quickly, even though it may appear that he's more detached or renounced.
So somebody who is engaged in karma yoga, he would be better than a jnani is driving by personal realization.
If a person is engaged in Krishna consciousness.
But that's karma yoga, that's giving someone self-sufficiency.
But if his desire is
yoga,
if his desire is Krishna, then he's better. If his desire is Brahman, not that.
Right.
So, last question. They can go, they get a choice where they want to go, depending upon their realization and depending upon their association, which really everything depends on. They can, Patanjali Yoga, their goal is to merge within the body of the Lord. So that is considered the worst. Practically, they don't even know about the form of the Lord, they still want to merge. And then some of them will go to Brahman, some of them will go to Vaikuntha, depending upon what their desire is.
Yeah.